Hello, we hope you didn't mind our mid-season hiatus there. We are back from our week off and ready to re-engage with the ongoing pop culture situation. This week we've got the beginning of the end of the epic fantasy that has consumed the entire country. Will the merciless, emotionless Queen finally get her way? Will the shaggy-haired rebel be forced into an alliance that might destroy him? Will irate legions from the frozen north descend to lay waste to civilization? But enough about Brexit, we're going to talk about the end of Game of Thrones instead. Also, we've got the new album from King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Are Australia's pop Hawkwind ready for what passes for the big time these days? And Slater on Spotify at last. Are we ready to come on stream the noise? And what will today's young people make of the band that Oasis could and should have been? I'm Andrew Harrison, and with me I have Sean Pattinson, the Daenerys Targaryen to my Tyrion Lannister. Oh, Sean, how you doing?
I'm all right, thank you very much, Andrew.
Did you enjoy your week off? Did you get any catching up with things that you don't actually have to talk about on this show done?
Yeah.
What did you see and do?
Saw Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
Which was incredibly funny. Very, very rude. Took teenage son who loved it. So yes, I did that. Pretended I was on holiday in London. It's very good.
And I believe you also saw Shazam.
Also saw Shazam, which I didn't quite like as much, but it wasn't bad, was it? DC having a go over Marvel. Still can't quite get there.
Yeah. They should put not quite as good as Book of Mormon on the poster.
And not quite as good as Marvel, even smaller at the bottom.
Well, I'm excited because Barry with Bill Hader is back on Sky.
Yeah, I'm really excited, yes.
It's a top show, that.
And well up for the
half an hour per episode, which, you know, take note, everybody.
Also, Sky, I've got Kidding, and that's very good. Can I just recommend that to anyone who's got Sky? Kidding with Jim Carrey is really good.
We have a guest this week, do we not?
We certainly do. And it's a compact three-hander this week, just like the tight six episodes of Game of Thrones. Michael Moran is a tech writer and journalist currently at the Daily Star, a former actual professional pop musician and a Big Mouth regular. And you're a full-on Thrones head. Welcome back, Michael.
How do you do, Sean?
The Star put Game of Thrones on the front page as Britain's biggest ever sickie day. Mm. Are you surprised it's such a big deal with Star people?
Yeah, well, no, I'm not. So I'm trying to agree with you by saying no. No, I'm not at all surprised. It's been very, very well managed, the hype. I think the Sky's and I guess Now TV's press people have done a lovely job of making this an event series. So people want, one, you want to be ahead of the spoilers, which is very, very hard because we all live on the internet now.
Oh, yeah.
And two, it's fun. You know, that whole idea of getting up 2 o'clock in the morning, it's like nerd Christmas.
Every day is nerd Christmas.
Is this Destination TV back then?
Well, I watched a recorded version of it a little bit before 9 p.m. Just because I was impatient.
Yes.
At the same time, I'm nerd that I am, I'm not quite geeky enough to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning on a work day.
Okay. Is it a weird state of affairs where a piece of genre fiction is the biggest show in the world?
Not for me.
Really?
It's a delight.
it's
what I've prayed for all my days. And I watched it with a group of people that I wouldn't necessarily think of as nerds, but it was an event piece of TV. You know, I made a big bowl of popcorn. We had a glass of wine. It was a thing. It was a little moment.
Yeah.
You know, not quite necessarily the coronation of our queen in 1953, but
close.
Up there.
All right. Do you think its success has changed what people want from mega fiction? Did it drive the geekification of pop culture? Or was it created by it? Chicken or egg?
I think the nerds have taken over the earth. I think that we always had the best stories. We always had the best characters. And it just took a while for all the cool kids to catch up with us.
Does the hierarchy at the start lament the fact that the show has cut down on the sex position, where characters would discuss Westerosi geopolitics while surrounded by naked ladies?
That still happened.
There was
still
one
happened.
I urge you to
actually count the edits, which I did. In that, every scene was 2 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And every scene was an absolute marmalade dropper. Every scene, something huge happened. 2 minutes on the nose, except for Bronn getting busy with the ladies, 2 minutes, 40 seconds. Check it out.
They're keeping it tight.
Yeah.
We'll be right into that first episode of the new series right after this quick reminder. Remember, you can get every episode of Big Mouth a day early if you support us on Patreon, the crowdfunder for great independent creators and us. Pledge us the price of a pint each month. That's about £5 in the sort of sophisticated haunts that Big Mouth people frequent. And you'll get each new episode on Fridays as soon as we finish nipping and tucking it. And you'll also get exclusive access to the extra bit where we stick around for a bit more Big Mouth. This week, yes, we are going full Game of Thrones geek out. It might be the last series, but if the show were going to carry on, which key authors and showrunners should take it over? And and what spin-offs would we like to see? Pledges are £5 a month to cover our studio bills and ensure that our watch is never ended. Search Big Mouth Patreon to find out more. All we're saying is buy us a pint. Okay, Game of Thrones, you know what's happening and why. How is season 8 looking so far, and can it deliver closure in a story that thrives on yes, but then something else happened? All together now, Dinklage, Peter Dinklage, Peter Dinklage, Peter Dinklage.
Everything you did brought you where you are now. Where you belong. Home.
They're coming. Our enemy doesn't tire. Doesn't stop. Doesn't feel.
I promise to fight for the living. I intend to keep that promise.
Right, Michael Moran, you're a confirmed Thrones fiend. This has been heralded like no show ever. Did you get the sense that season 8 is going to be the main event that we were sold?
Yeah, actually, I am completely convinced. I think that when I said before that there were these little two-minute nuggets of a plot's position, I think that's it. Yeah. I think what they did there is they said, right, so this catch up. Here we are. This one's met this one now. This one's met that one now. And all these people that were in disparate locations for the last seven seasons are now essentially all in one house for a colossal geeky sitcom. And now that's out of our systems. Everyone's met everyone. Now it's just dragons and zombies for 6 weeks.
That's what I sort of felt was the case with this initial episode, that it was a bit like, hang on, remember where we all were? Positions people, positions darlings. And it was like kind of everybody got an sort of immediate personal recap.
Yeah.
And also a chance. It was like a splash page in comics where you kind of see everybody's mugshot and it's like, you know, it's Cyclops. He's got a thing that shoots out of his eyes. There we go. Oh, I remember him now. I remember.
Yeah.
The thing that got me was, and I've followed this show relatively closely and I was surprised at how much kind of reintroduction I needed. I'd totally forgotten the major plot point of the first one, which we can probably mention now because it's hardly a spoiler.
I think that's fair.
Which is that Jon Snow isn't Jon Snow. It turns out he's Daenerys' half-brother. Mm. And that's going to make things... That's going to make for a difficult Christmas in Winterfell, isn't it?
Well,
considering what's gone on.
I think he's a nephew, actually, technically.
Really?
Yeah, I believe he's a nephew. But certainly the Targaryens, they don't mind keeping it in the family. So
there's a great circularity to it, isn't
there? I think she'll have no beef with that.
Well, there's a great circularity in that pretty much the first time we meet Jaime is when he is getting a bit too close to his sister.
Yeah.
And shoves Bran out of the window. And in this opening thing of the final series, he finally claps eyes on Bran in a great silent scene when it's like, thought I shoved you out of a window. And now you've turned into a kind of a wheelchair medieval Yoda somehow. How did that happen?
And also, can I just say that as a lifelong Viz reader, you use the expression, he shoved Vet Bran out of a window, has really set me off.
Straight to the Profanosaurus. Yeah. Yes. I thought it was in a small way a little bit disappointing in that not much happens in this first episode, and we've only got another five to get everything wrapped up with dragons and wars and who's going to be the king or the queen, Iron Throne, etc., etc. The only major twist really is that Bronn from Robson and Jerome.
He's lost that loving feeling.
He's lost that loving feeling, and he's been tasked with assassinating Tyrion and Jaime Lannister.
Yeah, and Tyrion.
Yes, both. Yeah, get a double Lannister hit. Sean, you're an awful lot less affiliated than Michael and I. If only this were a YouTube video series, and we could see Sean's
nodding
face right now. You did a bit of a recap. And
my research was the first episode of season 7, which I couldn't get through, and this episode, which I thought was exactly the same as the first episode of season seven. There's this throne. People want the throne. Yeah, that's a bit Shakespearean. I can get with that. There are 1,000 characters that you have to get to know very quickly if you're me, if you haven't seen it before. And you are plunged into Winterfell, which is a very wintry world. Jon Snow, it's
hence
snowing.
The name.
Yeah, I quite liked all of that. There's sort of real placemats there. And yet I thought, what difference is this to Dynasty or Dallas? Just everyone's got a fur coat and they shag a bit.
That's fine.
Is that legit?
I think that, you're looking at essentially more than anything else, it's Dynasty with dragons and boobs.
Because it's about
zombies.
Family, isn't it? Yeah, tits and dragons, as Ian McShane.
It's all about family, darling. Oh,
there weren't enough dragons in it for my liking. Anyway, I did find it, I just thought that somehow, with all the hype, that it was going to subvert something and I was going to be very pleased by that. And it just is, it was the very boring plot position, wasn't it? No, you know, the exposition was, I've done this. And then someone comes in and tells Jon Snow that actually he's not who he thinks he was. And I thought, that's a bit convenient. How did he get that info? He didn't even ask.
It's pretty inconvenient for Jon Snow, actually.
Well, the thing is, for us, whereas we have felt this coming, we've been waiting for that shoe to drop for about 3 seasons.
It looked terribly just made up on the spot then. So has this been rumbling?
It's been seeded.
It's been a rumbling and a ruminating.
Okay.
Well, one of the ongoing questions of Game of Thrones is, what is this show actually about? Who is this show about? Because key characters that you think we're watching their story are constantly taken off the board. And, you know, there's a theory that essentially Game of Thrones is the story of Sansa. It's the story of a woman from the most kind of marginalised and submissive position that you can be in if you are a member of a noble house, for that, by the way. She hasn't grown up in Fleabottom. But it's essentially the story of how she is moulded by events and also her innate personal character to be the formidable individual that will take control.
Yes.
I'm perfectly prepared for her next week to have her head lopped off and it actually turns out to be somebody else's story entirely. But, you know, that kind of sense that, you know, the great thing about it, the thing that we forget how subversive it is that it's never been a star vehicle and everybody's expendable, which has in itself become a bit of a cliche, hasn't it? The idea that literally anybody and entire bloodlines can be removed from the board in the most unexpected fashion has actually become the expected thing.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, when they Sean Bean'd Sean Bean at the end of season one, sorry if that's a spoiler, if you're planning to binge the whole thing.
Darth
one
Vader
go.
Is Luke's dad? What are you saying?
But that was it. That really set the tone for the thing because we've been encouraged for you know years and years of watching fiction that there's this one noble dude who embodies you know our feelings about our best selves, that he's the one who is moral and you know that kind of symbol of rectitude, and then it doesn't pay off for him. Essentially the bastards are getting all the fun and the people that are the good guys that we're you know encouraged to identify with, they get shortened by a head.
Well, which is actually another interesting bit of circularity on the first episode of this final series, which is, I believe, it's either Varys or Tyrion, I can't remember, actually does say, what would things be like if we were ruled by a just queen and an honest man? And
there they are.
Jon and Daenerys and, you know, bathing in dramatic irony and so forth. I've often thought that the story is essentially about a change in the kind of political eras in this imaginary world. We're moving from absolute monarchy despotism to a kind of monarchy by consent, and that there is a kind of you know teleological thing going on there. It's the beginning of progress in Westeros.
Yeah.
You know, the world is about to start moving rather than being frozen in amber and simply being who gets to sit on that very uncomfortable looking spiky throne made out of swords.
Yeah.
So it is political in that respect, in the sense that Dynasty isn't and never was. Dynasty was just who's Joan Collins being mean to. Nothing wrong with that if you like that sort of thing.
But again, about family, that's connection. What's it say about modern Britain, though? That's what I want to know, the dragon stuff. Why should I watch it? Can you keep trying to persuade me? Last time, Orbital were trying to persuade me to watch this and I'm still finding it difficult.
What it says about modern Britain is that political themes are eternal, that you know that the great quote from the first series, you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die, that victory goes to the most ruthless person. That thesis is being tested and has been tested throughout 8 series. And we're about to see the most ruthless person that we've encountered Cersei Lannister, now the Queen, she's all of her children have died directly as a result of her own conduct. She's alienated her entire family. She is an authentic tyrant. She's about to meet someone even more ruthless than she is, which is the Night King, who is the enormous mystery here.
Who's a force of nature as a character.
Yeah, and the original name of the series, the original book is A Song of Fire and Ice, isn't it?
So that's right.
It's the clash between the warm-blooded and the cold-blooded. Mm. What I'm really hoping for, I mean, maybe this is where we sort of ask for what are the last things we want from Game of Thrones? I want a sit-down conversation with the Night King. What do you actually want? Do you just want the world to be, like, cold and filled with the dead? I mean, I suppose the idea of a key character with no motivation apart from being a primal force is interesting, but when that key character is personified, you sort of want to have at least a soliloquy from him, don't you?
Yeah, it's like Jaws. You always want to hear the shark's point of view.
Yeah.
The shark has a very fair point, I think. Yeah. Sean, I mean, I know you're, as we say, not really affiliated from this, but are you in any way tempted by the notion of conclusion to this sprawling saga?
Not in the next 5 hours, but I'd waste five hours more of my life watching it. I'm not sure. The mad one, is it Euron Greyjoy? You're a bit mad and crazy.
The guy from all
of
the
Nordic
noir.
Poundland Wolverine.
It's difficult when you're not into a series to not see those characters as stereotypes. So it is difficult to get into it. I think on season 8, I don't think you'll get that many people who are newbies like me. I think you have to watch it from the start.
Yeah, I think it's not a book, but it is analogous to a book in the sense that you wouldn't necessarily crack it and go, I'm just going to read the last chapter now. You know, start at the beginning. Stuff happens. It's worth your while. Mm. Yes, there are boobs. Yes, there are dragons. There are a few zombies.
What are you hoping for from the final series?
A big fight.
Apart from a big fight, you always get them. What else are you?
Well, you see, I'm fighting this in myself. What I want to see is the good guy take the throne. But I don't think I will, because I don't think that's how life works, and I don't think that's how this story works.
But by the good guy, do you mean John, then? Because he's revealed himself to be criminally naive over and over and over again.
Yeah, he's a bit crap, isn't he?
He's not as naive as Rob.
No. Who remembers Rob Stark?
Good old days. Those were the days.
Well, Contenders, I mean, in the nature of the series, it's likely that Cersei is going to retain the throne because it's a very cynical show. Mm. It's also likely that Sansa would somehow find herself on it.
I'm inclined to believe that, yes.
John's a contender. Tyrion's a contender. But I sort of have this feeling that there'll be some kind of cataclysmic the final battle will be so cataclysmic that you'll end up with Gendry or, you know, Hot Pie, King of Westeros.
Hot Pie!
There's a guy who can just man of the people for the many, not the few. I can see Hot Pie ruling the century.
And just turning it into a massive Greggs.
That would be great. And under the sigil of the vegan sausage roll.
House Gregg.
What do we think how do we think Game of Thrones and its enormous planet-eating success is going to be seen, say, in 15 or 20 years' time? What's it going to say about the time period we're living in now, do we think?
That's what I'm thinking. It's escapism, obviously.
But it isn't, is it? It's the least escapist.
Dragons? Are you sure dragons
are not
escapism?
But they're metaphors. They're nuclear weapons. They're ultimate weapons.
Yeah.
And the way that an ultimate weapon controls you, you don't control it. Great bit, by the way. Great bit in this first episode. Jon and Daenerys are having a bit of a snog out in the ice floe.
Yeah.
And the dragon is not happy.
No.
Get your paws off my mum. What are you doing?
Yeah.
But then you get the reminder later in the show about the true nature of Jon, Aegon Targaryen. Perhaps the dragons are an awful lot wiser. Than we think. So that I like. I really like that. But I don't think it is escapism. I think it is the transference of real-world anxieties into a fantasy context where they can be dealt with more easily by people like me who can't do emotion.
Yeah, myth. Yeah. I mean, it's the great theme of myth and Greek narrative. I mean, they are here, aren't they?
Well, we'll be back in 6 weeks' time for the post-match analysis, all the goals and all the beheadings.
Yeah. I want zombies, though.
You'll get zombies, don't you?
Oh, there will be. Don't you worry.
Good. Well, I might watch one then.
The two things I can guarantee are zombies and hot pies.
Okay. Mm. Right, back to the world of the human race. We always ask our guests to bring in a tune, their editor's recommendation. And Michael Moran, what have you brought in for us today?
I quite deliberately went to see a talk with Viv Albertine and Tracy Thorne recently. And you know the way you miss a record completely? I completely missed the release of a Viv Albertine solo record. Just didn't see it. And then I thought, this is a thing. This is a thing I should probably have heard. I listened to it, and it is what punk rock really is. Not shouting, not banging up and down. It's actually more influenced by Can than by the Sex Pistols. But it's that I don't give a damn what you think of me, which is, I mean, I would say that having read her books as well, that's Viv Albertine's thing. She doesn't give a damn what you think of her. And that's what I really admire about her, because I care maybe a little bit too much about what people think of me. Listen to this song. It's nice.
What's it called, Michael?
It's called Confessions of a MILF. All caps on the MILF, please. Okay. House style.
Let's listen. In another century, things were not so great. Same thing with marriage, it's an unnatural state.
Okay, from the frozen north to the sexy south, nice. And Australia's King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Terrible name, hell of a band. Next week, they release their 14th album since 2012. Take note, bone idle Brit bands, in an ongoing mission to synthesise all the best bits of the 1970s and pretend that the worst bits never happened at all. Fishing for Fishies, another terrible title, was supposed to be a blues album, but the songs kept fighting it, they say. What do we think of it? We're going to find out after this track. This is Cyboogie, as in cyborg, boogie, cyboogie, do you see?
Yes.
The sweaty, Susie Quattro-tastic sounds of King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. There are three songs on a 9-track album with the word boogie in the title. Take note, Clean Bandit. And that's the last track on the album where you traditionally you put the slowie. Sean Pattenden, were you aware of them before I forced you to listen to them?
No, even 14 albums in, I wasn't aware of them at all. So I put this on not knowing what to expect at all, which I really, really like. When you've got no idea what's going to come out of the speakers.
And what did you think?
And what did I think? I thought it was great. This is escapism, and it's something that you put on and immediately are transported into something that is funny, it's witty, it's dry, it's got a bit of rock, but it's not overly rock here. Here we are as a Leviathan of whatever. It's Australian. They've, you know, it's going to be funny. I really, really warmed to it.
It's incredibly cheerful music as well. It's optimistic, major key, sunny. I think there is a thing with these... The Australian bands. You know the Australian bands
the
they
Australian
have now?
Bands,
the Australian
yes.
bands they have these
yes.
days. This lot, Confidence Man, Jogwell Ma, they're not self-conscious. Yep. They're not uptight like the Poms.
Yeah.
They're not sort of imagining that NME is still going and they're about to be described
There's no
as
Radiohead cool. element to them.
There is no Radiohead whatsoever.
Yeah.
And they do daft things like record 5 albums in 1 year and then give one of them away, or they do like free jazz. They're entirely free of filter.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Hawkwind. I mean, it brings to mind Hawkwind. It brings to mind early AC/DC. It's got loads of harmonica on it. And that sense, if you know that kind of real playful rock, before rock became the monster, you know, this is something that's sort of just revolutionary to listen to. I really, really liked it.
It had a similar... sort of mental feel, not necessarily the sound, but a mental feel to Super Furry Animals when they're ridiculously
yes.
on it, when they're living both in the real world and in their own kind of high contrast fantasy world of tentacles
comparison.
And dragons. And maybe it helps to come from somewhere that is not urban Britain, London, Liverpool, Manchester, whatever. Michael Moran, I'm guessing that this sort of like wigging out hippie bloody nonsense is not necessarily your cup of tea. Am I wrong in that?
You're absolutely right. Did not care for.
Yeah.
Two issues I had with them. One, there's altogether too many of them.
Come on.
There's about 7 of them or something.
Fabulous.
It's ludicrous.
Not everybody can be a synth duo, Michael.
Oh, well, if you try hard enough. Didn't care for. First track, I thought, oh, I get you. We're Tame Impala. I can live with that. And the second track, I thought, oh, no, we're not. Actually, as much as anything else, we're a kind of new age Lightning Hopkins. Could also live with that, actually more easily live with that, but it didn't sit. I didn't like the way that I was bounced from this kind of sunny, upbeat, kind of modern, what's the word? Tame Impala was my first reference point there. And then, as you say, you kept bopping into these boogie tracks that felt like they were made up on the spot. And it's lovely musicianship, and I would quite like to have played on them. but I don't really want to listen to them.
See, I think that Tame Impala is a good point. To me, it's like you can think of a handful of bands that would be like this if they just had a much greater sense of fun and a sense of humour and an understanding that, like, pop is more fun than rock. It's like, yeah, you know, it is quite cosmic West Coasty. It is quite there's loads of blues jams going on, but the blues jams that sort of tend to sort of fall over sideways and end up somewhere. They fall through the cosmic trapdoor and end up
In there. Well, it felt like the kind of people who might smoke those artisan cigarettes that you get.
I think this thing absolutely reeks of artisan cigarettes.
Yeah. Now, you see, I do not care for. Not my kind of thing. It's a switch off for me. And also, do you know what? Branding is important. It's very important. And they start with this name that they did. Actually, I looked it up because I thought, where the hell did that god-awful name come from? They made it up 2 minutes before their first gig because they didn't know what they were called.
And there was an argument between one of the band wanted to be called
Lizard King.
And the other one's called Lizard King. So they just threw it all together.
I like the name. Well, I don't know, you two have a problem with it. I thought the name was rather wonderful. I thought Fishing for Fishies was funny. Obviously something's happened.
I think King is a brilliantly terrible name because groups should have terrible names.
Yeah,
worst band name ever, The Beatles. Second worst band name ever, U2.
No, Oasis.
Oasis.
I'd just like to hold up my hands and say the Rolling Stones at this point.
Yes.
Actually, I quite like the Rolling Stones as the name for a band. But King Gizzard, this is the kind of thing. Do young people even write on the back of their rucksacks anymore in Biro? Probably not.
They'd need huge rucksacks for that, wouldn't
they? It's got loads of Zeds in it. And they're always good for drawing.
Yeah, lightning bolts.
It's got
them,
great logo
you?
Written all over it. I mean, this is the kind of music I usually cordially detest.
And myself too.
I hate the blues. I think it's stupid. But this is such fun. And the title track is like a children's TV skiffle thing about fishes.
Yeah.
You know, Plastic Boogie sounds like the Avalanche is doing Mark Bolan. No problem with that. Boogeyman Sam is basically the record Primal Scream were trying to make after Screamadelica when they went, get down with themselves and the Delta Man. But it was no fun. And this is fun. And the Birdsong sounds like Steely Dan and a lot less pretentious. I mean, it's like, generally speaking, stinky long hair van music is a real turn-off for me. And I looked at this and thought, I'm going to loathe it. And ended up enjoying it enormously.
I thought it was audio skunk. But that said, I did drag one of the boogie numbers, actually, into my big sprawling 2019 playlist.
Oh, there you go. That
so not so impervious to it. Yeah. No,
I'm around. The thing is, I'm a tolerant man. I just don't like a lot of it in one go. I couldn't listen to an album of that. But that one track I quite like with a little clavinet on it.
Yeah.
I forget it was one of the boogies.
I quite like... Yeah, where it boogies. The thing it connects to that I quite like is, you know, the massively... cleansed and desanitized version of psychedelia that was opened up to mass consumption in about 1968, 1969. The Beatles cartoons.
Yeah.
You know, Pepper Land.
Fruit Dumb Company.
That kind of thing, where the idea that these people had been taking drugs had been sort of brushed out of the picture, and it was like, look at the beautiful colours and the flying blue glove and the, you know.
It was H.R. Puffin stuff. That's what it is.
It was, you know, Crystal Tips and Alistair 10 years later.
Take your mum to Granny Takes a Trip.
Absolutely. Yep. And nobody has even heard of drugs, which is the kind of thing it's that kind of thing. And I find that very easy to connect with. Are these songs actually about anything, though? I mean, there's one called The Cruel Millennial, which purports to be about snarky, awful, terrible 20-somethings. But you can't actually hear the lyrics. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I couldn't hear any of the lyrics. I think Fishing for Fishies is about not eating fish. But that's as far as I could get with that one.
Yeah.
So we're not sure if there's any point to
it. Great thing about this, no subtext. Yeah. There are no hidden meanings.
What I like, though, there was a sort of theme to it being that boogie, and this bloody repetition boogie that got on my nerves, sort of turns into bogey in The Bogeyman. And I think that was quite interesting that boogie becomes the bogey and becomes something that you fear or something that you embrace. That's what I got off it.
That's what happened when you listen to this album for 19 hours straight.
What I got was there were altogether too many of them. They're really two bands.
And you like Game of Thrones. There's quite a few people in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, all right.
Mm. I don't know. I sort of think bands with lots of members, it's a gang, right? Yeah. And gangs are good.
And they're definitely not doing it for the money because it's really expensive to tour with loads of
people. Damn straight.
It's also really expensive to put out 5 albums in 1 year and give one of them away. I did, by the way, like the fact that one of these albums is called Poly Gondwana Land.
I missed that.
And like Gondwana Land,
yeah,
for listeners who don't know this, I'm sure you all do, the supercontinent at the age of the dinosaurs, which actually was composed of all of our continents smashed together into one thing. but like imagine that, only like more. Polygon to Adeland, like yeah. more. Imagine
oh,
that.
Whoa.
I know, but that is a real artisan cigarette thought, isn't it?
Absolutely, too right, yeah.
So oh, yeah, man.
Got to meditate on that one for a while.
No, they, I had no idea.
They reminded me a little bit of the Cosmic Scouser fans, but maybe that's me being parochial. Anyway, moving on. In a three-hander show, Sian and I get to choose a tune each as well as
Woo-hoo.
The guests.
Yay!
Sian, I believe you're staying with the Antipodean theme this week. What have you got?
I certainly am. I have Got You by Amyl and the Sniffers, who are incredible live. If you've not seen them, Amy, who fronts the band, will crowd surf at any opportunity. They are Melbourne punk rock, and they are wonderful. If anyone's seen the film The Castle that I've talked about before, all the other band members look like the family in The Castle with these quite incredible mullets and that very raw Australian punk look. They are fabulous, and I think there's going to be new stuff from them this year. I hope so, because they signed to Rough Trade last year in the UK. So come on, Amyl and the Sniffers.
All right, pop us a clock. Here's Got You by Amyl and the Sniffers. You look nice. Finally, sticking with unabashed sideboard-wearing trog boogie in the King Gizzard mould, for years it's been a standing travesty that Slade have not been on Spotify. How could this be? They are one of the true essentials of British rock and roll. Spotify without Slade is like a history book with round heads but no cavaliers, or an off-licence with no concept of beer. Anyway, that's been rectified. Slade are now on streaming platforms, as well as big clumpy platforms with stars on the heels.
Nice.
And it's not just Merry Christmas, everybody, and Squeeze Me, Please Me, but the weird early stuff and the questionable later stuff as well. We've been binging on Slade, and we're going to talk about them after this. The weirdly prophetic from Slade in Flame, How Does It Feel?
How does it feel right at the start? And how does it feel when you are thrown apart?
Michael Moran, you're of a similar age to me. Was Slade as big a deal for you as they were for me?
Well, the thing is, at the time, I didn't take them very seriously. I was a little bit, oh, like David Bowie's really serious, and or, you know, Roxy Music, they're really serious. They're kind of art school pop. I get that. And I thought Slade were a bit of a joke band. And they're one of those bands. I was the same with Zeppelin, actually. I appreciated them long after their demise.
Mm.
You know, I just kind of came back and thought, do you know what? Actually, they're really good.
Yeah.
And I hadn't. At the time, it was just kind of like this kind of bricklayer nonsense that I didn't really think about. And, you know, there was that guy with the mirrored top hat and the big mutton chop sides.
That would be Noddy Holder, the great
Noddy
Holder.
That would be him, yeah.
Yes.
And I thought, you know, I perceived them in their pomp as a joke band, and I now accept that I was wrong, that they were terrific, great players, 'cause I love you. All the kind of joke spelling makes you think it's a joke song. It is not. It's really good. It's really well put together.
Mm.
You know, Jim gets to play a violin solo on it. It's all nice.
Yeah. I mean, there is a kind of... You can hear, if you pile into, you know, the Slade canon, chronologically, as I encourage you to do, you can kind of hear where Beatleism is kind of handing... It's sort of reaching over Led Zeppism to get to a new kind of pop. And the style of Nod's vocals, that double-track thing, where you can hear the vocal cords straining and screeching. But the fact that everything is so... you know, tightened and compressed and built for Top of the Pops and built for medium wave radio really stands out. I mean, compared to what tends to be the kind of default lingua franca of pop now, 50 years later, which is very unfocused and full of spaces, this is crammed with stuff and it's all screaming for your attention and it's all, you know, get down and get with it is pretty much the mantra of the whole thing, isn't it? It is there to get to you quickly and to get you moving. you know, they were incredibly successful. It was Bowie levels of adulation, but never really considered to be an album's outfit. Did you get a different perspective from digging into the world of the Slade album?
Well, the thing is all I wanted to do was just listen to the hits again, because it just, you know, there's one of the beauties of the streaming platform sort of thing, the paradigm of you can get anything any at any time, is that you can be any age you want again. You can put yourself back to being 24 just by listening to Thomas Dolby's The Flat Earth over and over again. You can put yourself back to being 12 or 13.
Yeah.
By just listening to it. I've made a school disco playlist that's got loads of Slade and Alice Cooper on it. And it's just, it's a time machine.
Yeah.
I don't want to listen to albums I didn't know. The one thing I did do recently, is to take a slightly off topic, is I listened to Sweet's prog album. That's something you need to check out.
Oh, right. So the Sweet's. Well, you know, my first sort of inklings of pop really were Slade and the Sweets. And the first piece of music I owned was Sladest on cassette, which is here, which I subsequently reacquired on CD. I mean, the cassette disappeared ages ago. Rosebud, you know, disappearing sled.
Sladest.
But I got hold of the CD, and it just takes it. Obviously, it takes you right back, because it's the first music that made an impression on you. But listening again via Spotify, you realise. You know, this was sort of semi a compilation and semi not a compilation. It was kind of their first big record after they'd had the hits. It was kind of a recap more than a
like Bowling Boogie was.
Exactly, yeah. And you know, the kind of compressed ideas and the excitement, but also the weird tracks like Pook Hill or Shape of Things to Come, which I didn't really understand at the time, and I still don't think I really understand. They seem to be coming from somewhere that was both pop and weirdly, frighteningly grown up. And I found it very hard to distinguish between the look of Noddy on Top of the Pops with his mirrored top hat on and his stacky
trousers,
with the kind of people you'd see rampaging through a football terrace on you know, World of Sport or Match of the Day. It was all seemed to be part of a strange, unknowable, slightly violent and frightening but hilarious adult world. Sean, you're a fair bit younger than us. What did you get from your Slade binge?
Well, I had a go. I find them difficult in a way that they refuse to conform to rock and roll stereotype. And Noddy Holder is this paternal, maybe avuncular figure. And there's a lack of dysfunction, although there may have been with Slade, but there's a normalcy to them, which I don't feel any tension when I'm listening to it. It's some nice guys, have made some music, and they're going to have a pint afterwards. And there's something about what has happened in the meantime, how we see them, is those tropes missing and the nice normal guys. I found it very, very easy to switch off. And switch off just mentally. You go about and sort of walk out the kitchen as I'm playing it. So I'm not sure. It didn't grip me as I thought it might do. And I did used to listen to them a bit. I used to listen to Slade, which I think is the Slade one.
Slade with the Y-E-D.
Yeah. A few times. Because the songs, you know, good songs. But there was something about it that lacks a bit of tack to me. I do want to reprise the John Walters out of John Peel fame joke that he always called them in the 80s, Slade. I still think they should be referred to as that. Maybe that would give them the attention that I need.
There was that something I'd totally forgotten on the Top of the Pops repeats lately, when they did the countdown. This was about 1983 or 4, when Slade had come back with We'll Bring the House Down or something like that. And in the countdown, obviously, famously, there would be a press picture of the band, and up front, number 28. Picture of Fiction Factory. And Slade had gone in at number 16 or whatever with We'll Bring the House Down, and it's Slade, picture of Sade. They'd used a picture of Sade, and it said Slade, and this just could not be better. Well, you know what? Maybe it was even the other way around. Maybe Sade had got in the charts, and they just captioned as Slade. Either is good. I'm fine with either. You're saying there's like this kind of no sort of trouble or sort of disturbance in there. They are very Midlands. They are very regular bloke,
but
Midlands.
Utterly guileless.
Yes.
You know, to the extent that there's that thing. I saw a documentary about them a little while ago now. And Dave Hill had bought a house sight unseen and turned up in his stage clothes to take possession of it.
Yeah.
Discover that it was next door to an all-girls school and caused a near riot.
I never thought that had happened, Nod. It's like, you know, scenes from the unmade Slade sitcom. Yeah. It's basically scenes from Slade
and
Residence.
It's Vic and Bob.
Yeah.
It's totally Vic and Bob. Now, the Slade factor that everybody knows is they used to be skinheads before they were famous. Mm. And when you listen to the supposed skinhead era album or two here, it's not skinhead music. There's no sort of concession to, you know, reggae or soul. It's heads down, no nonsense boogie. Mm. There is, however, later in the catalogue, the inevitable nightmare reggae track. is attempted.
Oh, dear.
Which is, hang on, what's it called?
I don't think I got that far.
Did your mama ever tell you about the funky little nursery rhymes? It's a bit Me Too and it sounds like the goodies. So it's not great. All this stuff is not brilliant. And the early stuff has its clangers in there. There's a faux Led Zeppelin tune called Pity the Child. Or the mom who has to raise a child alone because of war. This is not your strength, lads.
No.
Your strength is come on, feel the noise.
The Skinhead thing was an engineered kind of image sort of to try to latch someone in the same way that the Who were kind of trying to latch on to mod, even though they weren't very mod music.
Yeah.
You know, the Who were a rock band, Slade were a rock band, and in both cases they were latched onto, you know, working class youth cults that were actually mainly about R&B and black American music and ska and stuff like that.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, if you were a Skin or a Suedehead with big side ears, the kind of the look had detached itself from the music culture fairly early on. So this was, you know, this was the kind of music you would listen to while you were banging the pints on the way to watch Wolves or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, the connection with reggae and so forth had been lost like the launch stages of a rocket two years previously. The thing that really sticks in everyone's mind, though, of course, is the incredible look of Dave in his stage clothes, as you say, and Nod in his movie top cat, and also, you know, Jim and Don. For a bunch of very normal guys, they managed to dress ludicrously brilliantly well.
Yeah.
And that's imprinted on the mind. Did anybody bother with the later heavy metal years? I couldn't face it, to be honest.
No, I couldn't face that either. I wanted the younger glory years, really.
Yeah.
Oh, Slade famously made a big impression on a young Noel Gallagher. I would say not a strong enough impression, I would say.
Yeah.
And there's a Oasis did attempt to do Come On, Feel the Noise, I believe.
And they did it live.
Yeah.
I think there's
quite a lot of Nod's voice in Liam.
Yeah,
quite a lot of that sort of.
It's very straining, isn't it?
Strained and screaming.
Well, see, I don't think Liam's got 1/8 of Nod's power. I think Nod is a vocal phenomenon. It actually makes me, you know, feel a little bit sore throaty listening to him. I love the sound of it. But I just, you know, as somebody who's done a little bit of singing, I feel anxious about his throat every single time I hear a note of him singing.
Yeah.
You know, from the very first notes to the very first, you know, Merry Christmas, everybody. Oh, dear God.
Yeah.
He's going to keep this up now for 3.5 minutes.
I strongly suspect that's the reason why they have never... They've stayed split up for that very reason, which is physically arduous.
Mm. Yeah, it's hard work.
Like Noddy Holder.
Yeah. Have you ever been to that art gallery in Walsall?
You know what? I've never been to Walsall.
Oh, well, Nod does the voice of the lift. It's a joy.
Really?
Just go up and down in the lift and listen to Nod.
I'm going to Walsall now.
Yeah.
You're on the third floor. Third floor, baby. So what did Noel Gallagher fail to take from Slade that he should have taken?
Talent.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I think he should have listened to Mott the Hoople as well. This made me want to listen to Mott the Hoople, who I think did this better. I'm sorry, Slade. I know that you were...
Do you think that looking for the kind of disturbance or the troubled rock star element in there is actually a more recent coinage than
but
Slade?
Often I don't look for the disturbance. I just found it so squeaky.
Mm.
And it's not marketed as if marketed. I don't think they have marketing then. But it doesn't look squeaky when they've got Slade written on their hands and the E on the thumb. And they're meant to look like tough guys, aren't they? That is a bit Skinhead.
Yeah.
And yet there's still a sort of lovely, well, we're still going to go for the pint afterwards, aren't we, lads?
They're supposed to be like a 12-year-old kid's idea of a tough guy, which is actually a better idea of a tough guy.
And it's my problem, not theirs, anyway.
Yeah, they're Shazam.
They are Shazam. They are absolutely Shazam. And we should remember them like this. I think kids should be force-fed Slade because it's like it is just pure ridiculous energy and excitement and silliness, and there's not enough of that.
Yeah, well,
I think the EU Convention of on Children's Rights wouldn't be happy with you there.
Yeah,
would you?
I don't care about the EU Convention on Children's Rights. I don't care about it anyway.
I'm shocked. And
before we go, before we disappear, I never get to choose a track for the show, so I'm having one this week. A month or so ago, Johnny Marr released a new song from, presumably, a forthcoming album. The song is called Armatopia. It's a bit more electronic and octave bassy than his usual stuff. Now Tellyman have had a go at it, and their version is absolutely great. It's even more electronic. Here you go. This is the Tellyman mix of Armatopia by Johnny Marr.
Yeah.
The end of the show is here. It means closing time chatter. What will we be discussing over Watney's Party 7 with Slade? Michael Moran, your foaming pint of 70s bad beer is in front of you. What are you discussing with Slade?
Something a bit gloomy, actually. Uh-huh. I'm sorry, everyone, but this is something that's impressed itself on my mind this week, which is that we increasingly, and it's a benefit and it's a hazard, we live our lives through social media. We communicate with people. And we stay in touch with people we would otherwise have lost touch with because, you know, we used to work with them, but now they're just our Facebook friends or on Twitter and that kind of thing. And in the last 18 months, say, I've had three people that I'm Facebook friends with die. Mm. And I feel a bit odd about those accounts. And in fact, it was one of those people's birthday today, this very day.
Was that the great Pat Long?
It's exactly
of Select
the
magazine,
great Pat
Long. A lovely, lovely bloke, a fantastically talented bloke, NME chap, really good. Yeah, and it's his birthday today, as we're recording, his first birthday since he died. Yes.
Yeah, and I feel like I don't quite know what to. There is no rubric for this. There's no etiquette for this just yet.
Yeah.
What do you do? Is do you dump those friends? Do you say right now, Steve Strange, you know, you are gone from this planet, therefore you are gone from my list? Or do you remain there as a kind of odd reminder that isn't a nice reminder necessarily? It's just a kind of, oh, yeah, you kind of feeling.
Maybe in time it will become a nice reminder, though, because, you know, presuming that social media is going to stay in the same shape that it is, I don't think there's any presumption that Facebook's going to be around forever. It can be superseded by something else.
Yeah.
The fact that the young people don't want to use it at all because they think it's for old people could hasten its demise, but it'll still be around in some form.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll get to the point where, you know, it's your mate's birthday, who hasn't been around for a while, will cease to be the saddening thing, and it'll be a nice reminder of your mate.
Yeah.
You don't know, do you?
I mean, yes, as you say, it is for the old people, Facebook. I am the old people.
Mm.
So it's, you know, it's very much my milieu. But I feel like the language needs to change, not it's Pat's birthday today, send him a happy message, because I can't do that.
Yeah. You know? It's not a happy thing when somebody's died young.
No.
But maybe the etiquette will develop.
Mm.
Maybe as time goes by. My mother is addicted to reading the deaths in the Liverpool Echo, right? Of people that, and as was her mother before her, and everybody was, you know, the deaths in the Liverpool Echo, a notice, not just on when someone has died, but on the anniversary of their death and on the anniversary of their birthday. Mm. And people who put death notices in the Echo genuinely believe that the Echo is delivered in heaven and can be read by the dead because it's addressed directly to the person. Mm. And that's very recent coinage. That's like less than 100 years old.
Yeah.
But it's a nice little ritual and it helps people cope. I don't know.
Did you see this week also, slight tangent, that two, I think, quite posh people have announced they're going steady in the Times?
Really?
Yeah. There's an advert this week in the Times. Just not that they're married or engaged or anything. They're just dating.
Ah, they protest too much. Something going on there.
Is that in the kind of announcements column? We're traditionally
Crawford, Richard Gere again.
Well, traditionally you go looking there for people who've given their kids stupid names, don't you?
Yeah. The thing is, it could be that they're dating and good for them, and you know me, I love a bit of romance. Or it could be that they're spies.
Could be a message, couldn't it?
Yeah.
Sean, what's your closing time chatter?
Very different. Sir Elton John has donated so much to the V&A of his photography collection, he gets his own gallery. And it's all called Gallery 101, which is a little bit
disturbing.
It's
got the worst thing in the universe in it. It's got a rat in a cage.
Yes. It has this modern art, so it will have. It is called the Sir Elton John and David Furnish Gallery. And if I was David Furnish, I'd just be thinking, I want something in front of my name.
What a title.
He gets a sir. Yeah, so I think, as discussed, we think he should be MC David Furnish.
That'd be great,
Because you can get that title without sort of much sort of admin bother. There's a wonderful picture of Sir Elton and the lovely David Furnish, and it looks like David Furnish is wheeling Sir Elton because he's sitting down, as in Lou and Andy from Liverpool.
They do look like Lou and Andy have won the lottery, don't they?
I once stood near Elton John. I haven't met him, but he was near. He was standing outside the Greek the Pillars of Hercules in Greek Street for some reason.
Enjoying a gasper?
Oh, no, maybe he was just enjoying the air of other people smoking, but he has the most baby soft skin. Maybe there's a picture of that in the gallery.
Good on him.
Yeah.
I guess it is access to quality moisturiser.
I think it's Dermabrasion.
Is it really?
It's an advert for Dermabrasion. I wouldn't have it. It makes you look really young.
Well.
That's weird. Yeah. Especially with a wig. Anyway, good for him. He's got lots of money. He spent it on art. I'm up for that. I think it's good. I'm better than the Sacklers who controversially way into too many.
Yeah, the OxyContin gallery.
I think maybe this is a new thing. We'll have the Robbie Williams gallery.
Perhaps
maybe.
We will.
The Zayn Malik.
The Slade gallery.
Yeah.
Just lovely pictures.
Should we go for a point?
Yes. Yeah. Well, my closing time chatter is I'm very much enjoying Festify, which is a little app that plugs into your Spotify and it creates an imaginary rock festival based on what you listen to.
I couldn't get it to work.
Couldn't you? Have you got Spotify or something?
Yeah.
Well,
got a few accounts.
It was great. The headline was David Bowie, supported by Tribe Called Quest, Sparks, Pet Shop Boys, Judah, and Bottom of the Bill Tin Machine. So this is great, but this is based on what I've been listening to.
Of course,
massively distorted by things we've had to talk about on this show.
Yes, me too.
Everybody else's has been ruined by their kids or by work. So either it's like a festival that's got Dua Lipa and Michael Nyman on, or it's the Spice Girls and Crass and Psychic TV.
Oh, that's good.
Which
though.
Would be just incredible.
I like that.
And you just think, I'd spend my life savings on that.
So I also had Bowie at the top of the bill. Hmm. But then, second of the bill, PG Woodhouse.
That would be just brilliant.
That would be an fantastic. Awesome, awesome, awesome show.
Oh,
it's because
that.
I listen to PG Woodhouse audiobooks if I'm having trouble sleeping. I find them very restful.
I can totally see PG Woodhouse doing Code of the Worcesters on the John Peel stage at 11 o'clock, tapping the mic.
And there'll be two more from him later in the show.
Yeah.
But if I flipped, you know, you could designate the time frame. It can be all time, in which case Bowie is number one, or I think it's the last month, then all of a sudden Viv Albertine shoots into it because I'm obsessed with this album that she released about 2 or 3 years ago, but I've only just found.
Well, my mate did his, and it was, top of the thing was, you know, I don't know, Super Fairy Animals or, you know, the Beatles and the Rolling Stone. And then sort of third support was just Christmas. Christmas will be appearing on the pyramid stage.
This reminded me of Janet Jackson. And sort of effectively tipexing herself to headline stages. It's a bit like that. You could do that. Yeah. I want to get it to work now.
We're delighted to announce that Christmas will be appearing.
And obviously there'd be Jockey Wilson in the darts tent.
Yes.
There you go. Anyway, the show is about to end. Patreon backers, the extra bit will be with you soon with a bit more Game of Thrones. If it were going to go on, which it isn't, what should happen? Plus some of our favourite moments from the entire series, which even Sian is going to have to say. In the meantime, that's the end of the show. Thanks to Michael Moran. Thanks to Sian.
Thank you.
Thanks to producer Alex Rees. And we'll see you next week.